And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Feared here on Declare Your Independence, and me, Ernest Hancock. Great day today. It is Friday, the 12th of February. Oh, yeah, it's Valentine's Day Sunday. Ha, 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 ha. We got to do something. All right. There, I got that out. I just reminded you guys, too. You know, I have one benefit of Facebook. I never look at it. I don't care. It's just I'm separated from all that crap, which is what we're going to be talking about in the first hour. But the one thing I get is there's one listener out of Houston that always reminds me when it's Donna's birthday. And I'm very appreciative. Thank you, Hal. That's a good I indeed. Okay, what we're going to do today in the third hour, Mark Passio is going to be on. He has a new platform, onegreatnetwork.com. And we've been participating in that, put some of the best stuff up there. But he's way more computer geeky than I anticipated in the quest for decentralization of everything. There's so much stuff, so many projects. And normally I'd be telling Paul Rosenberg all about all the stuff that we're doing, but we got an important article that he has we're going to be focusing on today. In the second hour, we got Dr. Alan Palmer, and he was a speaker at one of our vaccine education summits, where it was 1,200 studies, which is now up to, I don't know, thousands, you know, on the association with illness and vaccines and all this other stuff. He's going, you want a study? You think there's not a study? I'll show you some studies. Well, this is, it's all coming out. We knew this. This audience has known that we're on top of this. And, I mean, you know, here we go. First hour, Paul Rosenberg, good friend, Free Man's Perspective. Free Man's with an S, perspective. .com. This is probably one of the most useful articles that I think that now's the time. You know, welcome to the show, Paul. We'll get right into it, okay?
Oh, that's fine. Thanks for having me.
You know, this is what we're going to do. Paul Rosenberg, you know, if I want to know, we're going to talk about computer and geek and stuff and privacy and encryption and crypto hippie kind of man. He's the man, all right? But he has a newsletter you subscribe to. Go to freemansperspective.com, and I highly recommend. And Life Geared for Happiness. Now, you think this, okay, you know, we're going to talk about being happy and such. And it kind of I'm hoping that you can monologue us through this, and we can get through this in this hour. It's only 40 minutes. There's so much stuff in here to talk about. I'm going to let you present it. Paul, go, man.
All right. This article came about because I've been around a fairly long time now and have been through a lot of things.
Well, how old are you? You're not that old.
I get the senior discounted places, man.
Well, hell, they've been sending me AARP crap since I was 50. So, you know, that I'm just.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
You know, I was born in 61.
I'm 50. Well over 10 years ago.
I'm 59 years old. How old are you?
Okay. I'm 3 years older than you.
All right. Well, still, hell, you're not even the 65. Get all your Benny's stuff yet. Whatever. But, yeah, you get the 60. You kind of like, okay, I've been there, done that. All right. Go.
Yeah. Okay. So, I think about all of these things, you know, in which of these was I happy? And what are the things that make people happy on a daily basis. Now, you know, happy is kind of a tough concept because, for one thing, most people think of it as a change of emotion. You know, all of a sudden, you know, I got a check and I was happy. You know, the change of emotion thing, you know, that's by definition temporary. So I want to know more long-term happiness. And so what I did is I described it as, I described it as satisfaction and with punctuated by happy emotions, but generally a long-term deep sort of satisfaction. So I think, how does that happen? And it happens in the same way that happy families are happy. And as it turns out, it happens because of organization and arrangement of life, first of all, that are decentralized. I know I always come back to that concept, but it really is true. If you think of a happy family, this is not a family where the dad's a tyrant and he says, I am the boss, I'm at the heap of the hierarchy, and I'm going to tell everyone else what to do. This is not what makes for a happy family. And as it turns out, it's a really bad design. And it gets kind of into, you know, computer sort of designs where you have structures where the nodes, the members, are the primary thing, or where just the structure is the primary thing. And the great examples of that are the family where, you know, we pitch in together and are all the various things we do that really are satisfying in life. The everything from the Little League to your family to everything else, where we try to pitch in and do things. It's called ad hoc organizing, whatever, where we all pitch in and do things. These are the things that are satisfying and that create deep bonds between us that are beneficial. Used one example in the newsletter of the old man who lives down on the corner, and the storm last week damaged his garage, and he's too old to fix it himself. So three of the guys who live down the street say, you know what, let's grab our tools. Let's go help the old guy. And when people do things like that, it gets all the right incentives in them. And not only does it make the world better, certainly makes the old man happy, but it makes them feel good about themselves. And you know what? It's an effect that endures over a long period of time. Those three men, let's say, who go and help the old guy, they will never look at themselves quite the same way again. They'll always see themselves a little bit better. There will always be more of a benevolent bond between them than there was before. So that's really, really important. And it's those type of things that make people happy over time.
You know, one thing that you emphasized from the beginning was that you kind of start, as you always do, you know, a system analysis from a programmer coding structural how things are. And you have, you know, the primary mode or a system primary mode and a node primary node model. And, you know, what you're basically talking about is a hierarchical. You either live based on a collective or what somebody orders or says, or you put yourself first and then you're an add to the collective. And that was the primary. Why did you break it down into that? What significance does that have?
Well, here's the significance, because it turns out that what you find out that what I call the node primary arrangement, where you take each part seriously, each part has its own view of the world and each part makes its own choices about the world. This is precisely the model that makes us happy. But if you take the structure primary model, which is orders from headquarters and the central statement of government, do what we say or we'll hurt you. If you take those things, those are precisely the things that make us unhappy. And so I think we should take that seriously and to say, if we want to be happy, the model of the healthy family, where we all love each other and we're all working towards the same sorts of goals and helping each other, that's the model. we should go for.
Ask the model. Right, we're going into break. We're going to miss what you're saying over the music. We'll be right back. Paul Rosenberg, important day. You guys stay right there.
No.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show.
Intro.
Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Dip, 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 we're going. We don't need no stinking road by the collective. We can do it ourselves. You know, we'll build the road, same people, just for their own purposes. And that's one thing that we're talking about now is their own purposes. And I need, you know, happiness as a certainly a goal and a way of living, but let's define that as you had in your paper here, Paul. You know, happiness. What are you talking about?
Sure. When I'm talking about happiness, I'm talking about a persistent and pleasant level of contentment and satisfaction punctuated with positive emotions. That's my definition. And, you know, you really can't just use change of emotion to define happiness because that's all over the map.
Yeah, no, that's one thing I wanted to get to right there is that positive emotions define. I apologize. We've got like a second and a half delay here on Zoom. But, you know, define for me a positive emotion. How would you determine something positive?
Well, that's a subjective thing. But to be satisfied, to experience awe, to experience wonder, to experience satisfaction, to experience love, to experience kindness. All of these are either happiness that's itself or generating happiness. These are positive emotions. So those are the kinds of things I'm talking about. But I want to have a level of it, not just a few surges. So I want the level thing we usually think of as satisfaction. To be satisfied with what you've done, to feel happy about the things you've done. Old people experience this a lot when they look back at their life, but I want it all the time. And it is something we can have at least a whole lot. So I'm really convinced that that's really the right way to look at it.
Okay, now this is what sparked in my mind as we're having this conversation on this level. This is the one thing that, you know, it's going to pop up and now's a good time, is that there are always that guy. You know, we were happy and we had a great family in the community of the church, of the business, the whatever, and then that guy or gal came in, the sociopath, psychopath, scumbag, that messed up everything because they don't, their satisfaction is not derived from the same thing that we have. And that is what we're always up against. There's always something that they don't, they lack the empathy, the compassion, the Christ-like attitude of, you know, of being an add and not a subtraction. They get, you know, some kind of satisfaction from something else. That's what I, and throughout this whole thing, and that's where you start, you talk about separating yourself from the world, and you kind of, so you have to, you know, cultivate this group or excommunicate, you know, something from your life that is always present, and usually it's in the form of some government or a program or something. But, you know, talk about that a little bit, because this is what I'm seeing we're up against. This is like a natural state of us. It's families and tribes and communities. But, you know, we're always wanting to create a collective to protect us against them, and then they just get in charge of that, you know? So I'm just, you know, what you're talking about, how is it threatened?
We just want to separate from them to get away. Now, I looked back and I said, of the times in my life, when I was the happiest on a persistent sort of daily sort of basis, and it is what you say of not being punished or bothered by these giant hierarchies or whomever, is when I just got away and just kept away. Now, I was active in business in a lot of things all through this time, but all those things, they weren't mine. They were just crazy things out there that I was going to ignore unless they got into my inner circle. And I just kept away from them. And that's, you know, Jesus wasn't an idiot when he said, you know, my kingdom is not of this world. And the first Christians were not stupid when they said, we are not of this world. And they separated. Remember, they didn't fight Rome. They just got away from it. They said, Rome, it's barbaric. It we're not any part of that. Let's just stay away. And that's the right attitude. You know, there were in that era, there were guys called the cynics who were, you know, talking about how evil the state was. And they weren't necessarily wrong. They were weird, but they weren't necessarily wrong. But the Christians didn't join them. I'm not talking about, you know, first century, second century here. They didn't join them. They said, yeah, well, you're kind of right, but we're not going to throw rocks at it. We're just walking away. And when you walk away, the mental break is lovely. You get away from them. You're like, you know what? This is a primitive world. And there are people in it who the bosses of it are primitives and following, you know, a model from the Bronze Age. You know what? It's there. And I know I have to deal with it here and there once in a while, but I just want to get the hell away from it mentally first. That's the important part. And I don't have to fix the damn thing. It's not going to be fixed. So, you know, it's just a question of whether it morphs and comes and goes here. You know, where's Caesar? Where's Napoleon? They're dead. All their systems are dead. The pharaohs are gone. Eternal Rome is gone. These things go. It's not, you know, just don't take it so seriously. You find out that your mental universe opens up, and you find out that the world, when you pull back from this, all of a sudden your world is comprehensible again. You can understand what's going on in the world. You can understand your world really quite well. And this feeling of being able, of having a comprehensible world that you're dealing with is really nice. Now, yeah, there's the big ugly stuff going on out there, and that's fine. We have to, you know, deal with it from time to time. But the life of being separated from it, of not taking it seriously, has to be the life we go back to. Even if we have to, you know, deal with the maniacs, we go back to our nice, pleasant life of being separated from them and just saying, look, it's barbaric. I don't want to play.
Give us an example of how you think people can make that a focus. I mean, you know, is it a place? Is it an online community? Does it have to be in meat space? Is it, you know, you go find your... Because a lot of people do this. They go... it's Thanksgiving and you show up unexpected at the family reunion of... You know, I learned something, I want you, or I want to get away from my family and go start a new, or something. There has to be a primary direction. There's a conduit, there's a light switch, there's current, there's something somewhere of where we're getting to what you're talking about. And I've seen it a lot in, you know, philosophical communities, in the voluntarist communities, in, you know, a lot of broken people and broken lives looking to fix it, but they don't know how or where or what, but they're searching for what? What do you put in the search engine?
Well, you ask these gigantic questions. Or...
Yeah, and you only got 30 seconds to answer. So we're going to come back with that. When we come back with Paul Rosenberg, you know, this is, you know, that's a good way of putting it. You know, the search engine. I'm looking for fulfillment. Do I pipe in fulfillment, satisfaction, happiness? And I guarantee I got a webpage. Somebody wants to tell me how to do it, what to do, and where I go, and what to worship, and what denomination of the church, and always the 10% tithe, and maybe a little extra for the collective. So I'm just, you know, what are we looking for? Because it's happening right now. We have to find, we're looking for happiness. Because one of the big things was looking for food. After you got that, then what? Maybe a little shelter, you know, clean water, you know, and then, you know, we're.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Okay, I remember. We came back. You know, I said, hold on, we'll get to it. Then we're talking. What was it? Oh, yeah. Search term, okay? What is the question?
First term. Okay.
Yeah, if you don't know the question, I mean, okay. You know, a lot of times not getting the answer. So I go, all right, Paul, if I'm going in, Paul Rosenberg, freemansperspective.com, go get his newsletter. It will enrich your life with real tools and optimism and why of the future in the when it's needed most in the times of now. Oh, my goodness. So aside from search term in Freeman's perspective, the next thing that they should look at. And, you know, in do you want to seed it? I tell me what you think people should be looking for to maximize their satisfaction, happiness in life. What are they looking for?
Well, first, there's a lot of things to look for. And that's probably the first point to make is there's not just one. You want to have multiple areas, multiple groups, multiple numbers of people. Having friends on your journey really helps a lot. And if you have like-minded friends, it really helps a lot. But what you really, first of all, you got to start by looking at yourself. What makes me happy? Pay attention to the moments of your life when you really felt good, when you felt, you know, productive and capable and happy, and you were doing things. Focus on those moments. Write them down. Pay attention to them. Relive them. Think about it, because those are the clues. Those are the things in you that are resonating. So pay attention to those. Pay a lot of attention to those. Next thing is to remember that there's a great line from Emerson that I ran into years ago, and he says, we're always getting ready to live, but never actually living. And it's important to understand that there's no giant mountain you have to climb, and then once you get to the top of the mountain, you'll be happy. There is no, you don't have to have the whatever, the spouse, the job, the whatever, start being happy right now. Start believing that the good things in you can work and just start using them right now, because those are the things that are going to make you happy on the other side of the hill just the same. So do them now. And then in terms of people and groups and things, gosh, there are so many. Here's the things to look for. Here's the things that I think of. If you got kids, you know, local sports, your kid in the Little League or something, you'll find that most of the people there are pretty decent and you'll make friends. They may not be friends in every aspect of your life, but they will be people that you care about and you interact warmly with. You were talking about hackerspaces. Hackerspaces are wonderful. Hackerspaces are great places to go. Bitcoin meetups, my God, wonderful places to find interesting and informed people who are moving forward. But anything that is small and still works on an ad hoc basis. When I was young, some of my friends in one particular neighborhood, they had neighborhood clubs, and they would get 10 or 12 guys together. And they would find a storefront that was cheap on the side of, not quite on the major street. They'd find a storefront and they would open up their own little club, and everyone would have to kick in $100 a month or whatever it is. And they would open up their little club, and it would be for them and their friends and for anyone else who they want to invite. And they would show films, or they would just hang out after school or work, or they would do whatever. You can have little community projects, like I'm saying, the old man whose garage is broken and he can't fix it, or the old lady who really doesn't have any money, but she needs to have her sidewalk shoveled, whatever. And these guys put just together their own little club. They gave
give me a size.
Some kind of silly local name.
No, give me a size. Sometimes you got to worry. Sometimes, you shovel somebody's driveway and they shoot you. But, I want to get a size of what you think is ideal. You hear this Okta thing, it's 8, or 4 couples, or you have, you get 120 to 220, and then you get too big of a tribe, and you got to split off, if I was to do this, I'm looking for a Bible study of, a dozen people. What do you think an ideal size for the most productive, to not only get stuff done, but to generate happiness?
I would say definitely has to be less than 100. It probably starting with 5 or 10. And once you get to some point where the people involved realize that it's starting to feel a little pinching in certain sort of ways, then the guys who live over on the other side, they said, we're gonna open up another one over here. So you're kind of colonizing the world with these little clubs. But you want a fairly small number. You can have, somebody's going to be speaking on something on Saturday night and 110 people show up. But for a regular thing, 10, 20, 30, once you get more than that, it starts to get a little bit cliquish. And,
right.
You know, these are standard human problems. And, yeah, we should get over them and get past them. But it takes us time. So don't push it.
Does it always turn into a
wonderful?
There's always, you know, a primary. You know, there's always somebody that, you know, fills out the invitation, makes the, you know, in charge of signing the paperwork for the whatever or creating the time. It always, there's a natural leadership that kind of evolves from these things. And a lot of times it gets distributed or passed around. It was kind of like a Viking thing, Greenland, you know, I'm in charge this week. I mean, you know, that kind of thing. So what kind of structure do you see over history works the best?
Simply neighbors and friends pitching in and doing things. If Mr. Jones is going to be the one who kind of drives it this year, that's fine. If he has time, and you know, maybe next year he'll be busy and Mrs. Smith will do the stuff. But simply on an ad hoc basis, when it gets to the point where we're going to have to try to have structure and do this, then it's time to separate, to move on, not to split the thing. Like the old Greeks used to do, they had a city. When they had too many people in it, they would go send some of them off to start a new colony. Just do something like that. Keep it at its level where it works. Size is not a virtue in these things.
Yeah, go start your
quality
own freaking is. HOA.
Right.
You know, this is, I mean, it's a, they try and, see, a lot of these control organizations try to use the structure of what you're talking about to forward an already predetermined agenda. You know, I can see it happen. So I'm wondering if we can distill down what the traits are that you want to stay away from or you want to incorporate. Is there some kind of rule checklist you have in your mind?
Well, the important parts are that everybody operates independently. No one is taking orders from anybody else. Once you get that layer in there, it's doomed. But as long as everybody gets to do what they want, what they think, when they want, there's going to be various little issues that pop up. I mean, look, we're dealing with a humanity that isn't properly developed yet. Here we are. We're making the best of it, and sometimes things are going to go wrong. But that's fine. That, you know, that's just the way it is. But we want things where everybody is meeting as an equal. We may do different things. I may be better at X. You may be better at Y. And we split things a little bit that way. But we're deciding, not somebody deciding for us. Because once you got somebody deciding for you, you're less alive. You're less of a positive force. You have less voltage to apply to this thing.
Okay, we're going
that's
into
what
break.
We want the purpose of this.
When we're coming back, and just going out in just 20 seconds here. What I want to make sure that we get to, there's a spiritual component to this. I mean, are humans spiritual beings in some way? Do we, you know, do religion play a part in this? A common belief, is that a, you know, a Christ-like standard to be Christian and to be Christ-like? Does that mean you have to check off a whole bunch of boxes, or you just try and emulate a standard? Is this already?
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
Ba-ra-ra-ra.
I want to break free from your lies, your soul.
Uncovering the secret. Expose the lies. That's what we're doing here on Declare Your Independence at freedomphoenix.com. Freemansperspective.com. Paul Rosenberg, wealth of perspective and information. Now, what I wanted to do, I'm glad we got through a lot of this, and there's so much more we can talk about this. But one of the things is there's a spiritual component, and I want to know what that means. Is it like, you know, acknowledgement that there is a deity, or the belief that there is a overall plan or something changes the way we think? It gives us a goal, a standard, or something. and we're trying to, you know, what size? Well, we're kind of, you know, you don't want to get too big, and how much time you have to devote to relationships, and you actually remember people's names. And I remember in Bible studies, they had, we had parties or something, and they had this game where you had the sheet between two people, and both teams would have a group of people, and then, you know, they, you know, you go and you sit in a chair facing each other, and then they pull the sheet down, and the first person to say the other person's name, they remembered their name, you got a point for your team. I thought that was amazing. I'm going, oh man, I'm going to get my butt kicked on this one, you know, but it was remembering people's names. And I thought that was such a great, and if you got too big a group, yeah, you're not doing that good, you know? So that was kind of a physical manifestation of what I'm talking about. But is this a lesson we learn from a spiritual belief and gathering in support of our belief in a deity, or is it that the spirituality itself or the belief? Is there, you know, I want to get some kind of a higher level component of humanity in this thing. You know, help me out, Paul.
Okay. Well, the problem with numbers is really just, it's a well-known concept called Dunbar's number. Humans just don't do well with too many faces and names and individuals at once. So this is a particular limitation we have. But when we get into the spiritual side, it's a really interesting set of questions. One of the funny things you notice over time is that if somebody is going to demonstrate a lot of heroism or something like that, they're probably a believer of some kind. That's just an observation, but it stands pretty well. There's something to believing in something that really strengthens internal circuitry in us. Now, this is can be problematic too. None of these are perfect solutions. But first of all, the spiritual component most people, like most of us in the West, think of is some version of Judaism or Christianity. And these are traditions with some wonderful concepts in them. There's really a lot to be gained in this. So, you know, there's a lot of good things in these groups. And there's also the point where you go, nothing we see could have created what we see. Why is there something instead of nothing? Why is there anything at all? And you're going, well, at least I can make a really good logical argument for a creator. It's when we get into all of the various doctrines that things go crazy. But there's a lot of value in it. We have a hard time putting our fingers on it because we're not quite well developed yet. But we have to take what is good where we can find it.
Yeah, the value in it. Let's focus on that for the rest of the segment. There's a lot of value in it. Okay. What's that value?
Oh, my. The value is that you coordinate your internal circuitry inside yourself. You become a better person. When you take, I like quoting Jesus a lot. I quote Jesus far, far more than I do any the rest of Christianity. I draw a hard line between Jesus and his advocates, and I stay on the Jesus side. But you can take some of the things he said and just think about him and look at him and take his concepts. And if you can ever separate them from religion, you're going to find a wealth of valuable stuff in there. Little seeds that you plant and you think about 30, 40 years later and you begin to understand what he was talking about. So I think there's a tremendous amount there. But in the Bible in general, there's a lot of really good stuff. Are there some things that you know, nobody takes seriously because they're a little barbaric? Yes. So what? Take the things that are good and take them. And there are other things that go on. Once you're with a group of people, a Bible study or whatever, you find that certain things aren't a problem anymore. If you're a really smart guy, you're just, you know, by accident of birth, you're particularly bright, you're probably going to be mistreated for it in school. The smart kids don't really get treated very well. But if you're in a religious group and you're all very serious about things, then being smart or being particularly noble or whatever is now an acceptable thing, and you'll even be protected for it. This is liberation for a lot of people. This is why a lot of people with unusual talent end up in these sorts of groups, because in the group, they can be what they are and not have to deal with envy. That's a really important thing.
Very. And I can see, you know, even as throughout my life, I can tell that there are a lot of people that are, by having capability, by, you know, being a challenge to the collective. And the collective really wants to emphasize trivial things like celebrity or athleticism, or which are many times noble causes, but really just to twist that popularity into support of something. You want them endorsing something. You want them to. I saw the Super Bowl halftime show. We just turned it off. The family. I haven't watched football all year, and we haven't watched Mahomes and Otto and, you know, Brady. You know, the old guy explaining it to him. And then you had the halftime and this evil demonic red eye. What the hell is that? We just turned it off, and I'm going, there is something that they're emphasizing at the big giant. And we got, you know, bombers going over, and then. There is something else going on, and you find refuge in the family. And our family made the decision of turn it off. Holy crap. I find refuge in these small groups, and I'm looking for right now, we got a couple minutes left, for people to start looking for this refuge, and they don't know. They don't have a good family. They haven't found happiness yet. They are, you know, searching for this start. Freemansperspective.com. You go and you get that newsletter. That will send you on a much happier, more fulfilled life of just sharing with Paul his perspective. And I tell you, that's why I like having him on. It resets my optimism. It resets what can be. It changes. I find happiness in reading Paul Rosenberg. Let's put it that way. Okay? So, other than subscribing to freemansperspective.com, what do you think is the first action they should kind of reset and calibrate their head, go 40 days and 40 nights in the desert or what? I mean, give them something.
Well, some version of 40 days and 40 nights away. I mean, it might be 10 minutes, you know, in the bathroom escaping the mania of the world. But in that little space, just center yourself. And understand that the problem is not you. The solution comes out of you.
Thank you.
You may not have found it yet. You may not have, you may have only found pieces. But the solution is going to come out of you, and you were born for it. It's already there. There's not some giant thing you must do, and then you will be able to do it. You can do it right now where you are. Yeah, you'll be better at it in 10 years. But you can do it right now and start with you, because you are born for that.
And recognizing who the bad guys are. And if you are a bad guy, stay out of my way and I don't need and go away. You know, and they're getting, you know, hell, it's going to be software that we're working on to help, you know, your reputation precedes you. And we all know your scumbag and sociopaths need not apply. You know, it's like the libertarian mission statement. You know,
right.
We advocate, you know, the rights of the individual and, you know, and against this adoration of the omnipotent state, you know, where, like, you know, this worship. So you got to have standards, man. You know, Paul Rosenberg can help you with those standards. I'm looking forward to this. All right, the music started. I know you can't hear, you know, and it's hard to hear you over it, right? It's a commercial for Paul Rosenberg. If you need internet privacy, which is going to be, it's already a big, giant deal. Go to Freeman's Perspective. Where should they go? Crypto hit. Where should they go? Other Freeman's Perspective to go on their technical.
CryptoHippie.com.
Yeah, real. Of course, it'll be like, you gotta, you know, like,
all the
do it.
Get out there.
Fake, go get the fake, get the real. Freeman's Perspective.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, unafeared for a lot of reasons. And it's, if you understand the nature of the beast, you know, then it's a lot easier to you know what you need to do and what you need to stay away from and how you need. And what do you need? I don't know. I just want to be content, you know, peace of mind. There was it really had an impact on me. Donna's trying to get Dr. Alan Palmer on. I don't know. Are you talking to him? Okay, we'll do the phone. Well, I need one of these lines. You know, you got to... Well, here, I can do this. Well, then we're not going to get it. All right, hold on a second, Alan. All right, we got you there?
Yes, sir.
There we go. We'll get you in. Okay, what we're going to do with Dr. Alan Palmer is he's spoken at one of our vaccine education summit that we did. And the big question is, yeah, where's all the studies? I was looking for a study. I don't see a study. I was trying to have a study. And I'm going, are there any studies out there? Or Dr. Alan Palmer's like, you want some studies? I'll give you studies. And it started off with, you know, the truth will prevail is one of his writings. But he has 1,200 studies was one of... was it a book or I remember us putting it up and you could access it online. Did it actually make it in the book form, Dr. Palmer?
Well, not that you can buy in a book form, but because it wouldn't be as it won't work as well in a book form because it's a 730 page document.
I know. And there's more study. It's like by the time you even did it, it's like it's 1400 now. How many studies are there?
Well, there's over 1400. But it's designed in such a way that the table of contents are active links. So when you're going through the table of contents, if you see something you want to read somewhere contained in the manuscript, you basically click on the link and it takes you right there to page 550. So it's more of a reference and research tool for people. They can jump around in the document easily using the PDF format that way. And it's also keyword and key phrase searchable. So people can type in a autism, let's say, or they type in MMR vaccine, and it'll find everywhere in the document where it talks about that.
Awesome.
Plus, now, it has the links to all the studies, the links to the studies right on PubMed. So if it were in a regular paperback format, you could never access all those features.
You know how we did that with our newspaper is we used the newspaper, all the hyperlinks of what you would have as searchable is a QR code. So physical book interactive with the internet, but that takes up some space and it's a pain in the butt. But, you know, so it can be done, but damn, it's just easier to push a link. All right.
Well, plus it was free. So, you know, it was a free download, so it wasn't designed to sell. And in about 2 year period, we had over 100,000 free downloads. Now, recently, in December, I decided to charge $6.95 for it. So I am charging something, a nominal fee for it right now. But we did.
Hello? Oh, dang it. Did I lose him? I lost you there for a minute. You there?
Oh, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. You unplugged something?
So sorry. I'm not sure what happened there. I'm sorry.
Okay, now the one other question, is it continually updated? I mean, is it something that, you know, as you get more stuff, you just add to it, and that way you don't got to go to a printing press?
Yes, I consider it a living document. Now, I update it. I'm gathering data right now to update it again. The last update was in the end of October, so I'm getting ready to do that. So probably about three times a year I will update it with another 100 or a couple hundred studies. and just kind of keep it going. This next update I'm going to be doing will cover a lot about the COVID vaccines.
Of course. All right. How many studies are we up to?
It's over 1,400, I know, but exactly, I can't give you the exact number off the top of my
head. Yeah, stop town, don't care. All right.
After, no, 14 and change.
Yeah, I know. I mean, after 1,000 or after 10, you know, I mean, you know, 100, whatever it takes, we're good, you know?
Yeah.
So this is, and that was one of the things, you know, I don't want to, I know you're kind of sensitive about, you know, your background so on because you're a prominent doctor with, you know, like, you know, major entities and so on. Yeah. So share what you're willing to share to give your bona fides with the audience.
Well, I'm a chiropractor. I've been in practice for 35 years. I'm semi-retired now, pretty much retired because of a back injury that I had. So I don't have a brick-and-mortar clinic anymore. But I do a lot of nutritional consulting. I can do that, health coaching, things like that for folks. And you know, my journey with this vaccine research really began early in my practice because I would get a lot of questions from parents, especially about their children, whether they should vaccinate or not. And I never told them do or don't. I basically gave them a lot of research, and I had a lending library. I would give them books to read, and then I would tell them to go to the pediatrician and ask for the same, you know, ask for data, ask for studies, ask for evidence, and then make up a, you know, make an educated decision as to what they think would be in the best interest of their child. So that was the approach that I had always taken. And so I've worked with four different professional teams as their team chiropractor over the course of 25, 30 years. and so, you know, I have a lot of experience in that arena as well. But my passion in the last 4 or 5 years, Ernie, really has been on vaccines because there is so much that people are unaware of as it relates
Why?
To the safety and efficacy of vaccines.
Why? How did, you know, I'm sitting there, you're doing major sports teams here in the Valley. You know, they, you know, big, bad, you know, celebrity, we know them and they know, you know, Dr. Palmer and he's a good guy and all. You kind of had to, you know, separate this controversial stuff with, you know, that sure as hell more even now because this is early on. And he knew to kind of, we're not going to emphasize, you know, put this on my, you know, studies, resume, I work with, you know, you lose that gig. But, you know, he's just, yeah, but I'm going to go out and say, and how many doctors have patients that they go, here's some research in a lending library and make sure you get, I mean, how often does that happen, you know? So this is something that, you know, and I can't remember how we came across you. If there was a suggestion of someone we talked to you, we interviewed, I go, hell yeah, get the Vaccine Education Summit. And that one was with, yeah, we had Dale Bigtree and Dr. Judy Mikovits and a bunch of, you know, other prominent individuals, you know, Wayne Rhodes and, you know, James Lyons Weiler. So it was a great summit. You know, you go to vaccineeducationsummit.com and you'll see the presentation for Dr. Palmer there. And I tell you, we preempted all we could see it coming. How far off were we? Well, you want to know where's the study? Well, Dr. Palmer, you want a study? I give you a study. You know, read this. And they're like, yeah, but I didn't want that. You know, you damn it, 1,400? Well, just one. I mean, you know, God, it's never, you know, you never satisfy. So what are you up against? When you do this, what, you know, if I was to, you know, read all the studies, went through the whole thing like you did, what is the takeaway that you want to share with the new family?
Well, you know, really, I mean, the takeaway, I think, for your audience, Ernie, is that we have a major problem with the regulators in this country, the CDC, the FDA, the alphabet soup regulators that regulate pharmaceuticals in this country, because they have such an incestuous relationship with Big Pharma that the people working in these agencies are former Big Pharma executives. And then when they're done in the CDC or whatever agency, they go back into pharma and get lucrative jobs. So there's this revolving door between our regulatory agencies and pharma that is filled with conflicts of interest and bias.
Oh, when does that not happen? We'll be right back. Dr. Palmer, Dr. Alan Palmer. Well, we got a website here. Wellnessdoc.com. Wellnessdoc.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
With Dr. Alan Palmer. Now, we're going over, there's so many studies, and it just kind of sum it up, you know, what do they tell a young family or an individual that's, you know, looking to, you know, for truth? You know, they, you know, I'm a, you know, I remember it wasn't the vaccine education summit that you spoke at. It was the one, that was three years earlier we did one in the fall of 16. And it was this one, it really had an impact on me. Of the whole thing, this is the one thing that I remember. There was a young woman probably in her mid, late 20s sitting up front. And a lot of people were there. We encourage it, you know, bring out your cameras and your tablet, whatever, and record. I don't care. So she was there, and we had all the, like we did at your summit, we had all the doctors and the presenters up there in a Q&A forum thing. Well, this woman asked about where to get the data and for studies like yours, for a book like yours, because what she did is she thought, okay, I'm going to be a good mom. I'm going to get, you know, the information I need. So I went to Google. She goes on to Google, and she got all these anti-vax, they're all crazy people, crazy. Don't pay no attention yet. Get your freaking vaccine because the WHO says. World Health Organization, United Nations, mm-hmm. Central Command of Bill Gates, okay? Mm-hmm. And she did it, had a vaccine-damaged kid when she was specifically looking because she had a reason to think in her family there was problems or something. And, you know, she started tearing up, and I started crying. I mean, I was tearing up big time because here is a woman that took it seriously, did her due diligence, went and tried to find the data, and was lied to intentionally for pharma to get someone like her not to be vaccine hesitant and denied them access. Are you, your studies, are they throttled down from search engines? Are you easy to find? You know, how's the censorship going for your book?
Well, I'll tell you, in the process of creating my book and doing research for updates, Ernie, there have been major changes in the algorithms with the search engines like Google. Originally, when I started the book about 4.5 years ago, the original work I was doing, I would type in something like vaccine injuries, for example, and it would come up with all these different alternative websites, these different groups, vaccine advocacy groups, vaccine safety, risk awareness groups, all their websites would come up. And it was easy to find information and to get links to other information and so forth. But what I noticed is by the time I finished my book and there, and after that, over a course of a couple years, those search engines were not so friendly. And today, if you type anything like that in there and you're trying to find unbiased information, you will just come up with CDC information and MedPage and Mayo Clinic and, you know, all these different medical resources. But it you cannot find, you'd probably have to dig down to page 15 or 20 on your search to be able to find anything that doesn't follow the narrative narrative the public spoon-fed. So there have been some major changes in the way people can access information. And, of course, recently we just saw just yesterday Del Bigtree's Instagram page was taken down, the High Wire's Instagram page, and Bobby Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s Instagram page was taken down just yesterday. So they have lost all their platforms now, I believe, other than Twitter. They've lost, you know, YouTube. They've lost Facebook. Now they've lost Instagram. They've been censored and kicked off of everything just because they're sharing reviewed science. They're sharing facts. They're sharing evidence that goes against the grain, against the narrative that pharma and these government agencies want people to believe. So they're being silenced.
Don't worry, audience. I'm going to tell them all about it in the break. You know, they already know what I'm going to say, but they're tired of hearing it. All right, go ahead, because we got alternatives that we, like we did with Plandemic and stuff and everything, and we're going to help you out. But the this censorship is because of what? Are they a product of the state? Is it big pharma and they, them, those, and the collective, it's all one thing? It's a, you know, it's they, them, those, and versus the people of, and we're just cannon fodder? I mean, what are you starting to realize here?
Well, I think I've realized for a long time that pharma, it they throw money everywhere. They throw money into medical schools. They throw money into research. If you don't publish certain research, then you lose your funding if you're a university. They throw money at politicians. They throw tons of money at the media. So basically, if there's a media outlet that is going to go against their narrative, they'll say, well, we'll just pull the plug on our advertising. So nobody is going to go against their narrative. And so that's the problem. He who controls the money controls the power, I guess. And that's the bottom line on it. So that's what we're really up against is this
golden rule. Those that have the gold make the rules.
That's right. That's right.
You know, at a fundamental level, those of activists have been doing this for a long time on a principled basis of the only purpose of government is defense of individual rights. You know, when it doesn't do that, it's time to alter, abolish, it's your right, your duty. That's why this show is Declare Your Independence, because that was the basis of the Declaration of Independence. It's like, look, the only reason you even have a government is the defense of individual rights. The king's not doing it. The crown's not doing it. The government in whatever form of shiny badge they're wearing is not doing it. In fact, they're there to just, you know, just harvest us in every way possible. And a lot of times, even more insidious, is not just kill you and take your stuff like they did, you know, the Jewish community in Nazi Germany. You know, now it's like, no, we don't want to kill them. We just want to make them sick and have to pay us to live. Woohoo! You know, and we need to give them a bunch of shots, and then they need a bunch of stuff for a long time. And I'm going, you think it's more complicated than that? It's not. These guys are evil, and by every standard. And I'm going, okay, you know, why? You know, is it because they can? I mean, I'm starting to find out, Dr. Palmer. It is over the last couple of years, you know, well, since the 16 election cycle, you start to see a pattern, and it is you provide these positions of power and to protect you against evil people. That we need to have a government to protect us against the, you know, people with no empathy or compassion, the sociopaths, the psychopaths, and then they take over that very entity. Then what? You know? So I'm like, I'm not a big government fan because the bad guys always get in charge of it because they're bad guys. I always stop. So we're up against an evil, simple Simon. They have no empathy. They have no compassion. And they are perfectly willing to damage you, your family, your children, everything because it makes them more money. How far off am I?
I'd say you're pretty spot on, Ernie. Pretty spot on as usual.
It's so simple. I mean, for me, I'm like, okay, so then how they go, Ernie, do you think they would, I don't know, you know, put stuff in the air, put stuff in the water, put stuff in the food. You know, I go, why? To maintain, enhance, and expand their control and power over you at your expense? You know, I don't know. Can they? Well, then they are, you know, because they can. And they will until they can't.
Well, here's a perfect example, Ernie. When we saw this pandemic coming down the pipe and we started seeing, you know, what was happening, we didn't know what we were dealing with. Is this like an Ebola? Is this something that's going to have an extremely high mortality?
Okay, we're going into break, and I don't want to miss this very part. When we saw the pandemic come, all right, that's what we're going to start right off with. We come back, okay? And I'll tell them about the ICFS thing, the solution. We're going to get this book done for ever.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
And Dr. Alan Palmer just got IPFS explained to him, and I think we should get the file and put it up like we did Plandemic Movie and Forever and Always, and the man can suck it! Are you in, Dr. Palmer? Come on, man, say it.
I love it. I love it.
All right, boom. This is what I need. How many megabytes is the file?
It's about, I believe, about 8 megabytes, 8 or 9.
I whiz on 8, okay? This ain't nothing. All right, so we go. So you send me this file, and we'll have the guys put this up, and we'll get a hash, hell, probably by the end of the day. I mean, they're already, hell, they probably went and got it and did it while we're talking, okay? So go ahead. You know, I'll go check because they always do that. These guys are on it. You know, let me go see. Pirate Box. Declare. They're ready. All right. So what I need you to do, send me, email me the full file, As soon as we get off here, by the end of the day, probably, you will have a hash. And it just looks like a, you know, it says, you know, HTTP, you know, IPN, blah, blah, blah. And it looks like a Bitcoin address. It's just whatever. But the thing, and that's one thing we're working on, is search for that. And that's a whole nother issue. But what we did with Plandemic is we took that file and we put it up on the system. Well, they kept playing whack-a-mole with it. They kept deleting, deplatforming, and whatever they could to anybody and everything. And I go, look, we'll just put it up here, put that hash out. So if you put, you know, IPFS Plandemic, you know, and certainly, even, you know, Freedom's Phoenix, it'll blow up. It'll come up, well, I don't know, maybe not on Google, but, you know, it'll come up. You say, here it is. There's the file. So no matter how much they try and take it down, it's there forever. They don't like me saying forever, but I go, yeah. Well, when they can take down a gazillion nodes, and you let me know how they do that. So this is up, and the people kept putting it up. So it got downloaded a billion, top billion with a billion. And that's what we need to do with your studies, because they do not want it to be searchable. They do not want it to be available. They do not want it shared. And it's only 8 megabytes. Freaking, I'm on it. Woo-hoo! This is why we did it.
That's awesome.
All right. So you're going to send it to me? You're going to send it to me?
Yes, sir.
Boom.
Yes, sir.
Boom, 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 boom. Then we'll put it up on Love Bus Liberty Tour on Telegram and Declare, and we'll have, and then the community, the you know, vaccine education people that's out there and doing whatever, have access to that a hash that can't be hacked. Because what happens is, wherever you put it, they just take that out of the search engines. You can't find it. You can't share it. You don't. And all you got to do is share this one hash, and they have available to it, and it's not going away.
That's fantastic.
And,
thank you.
Nana.
I love it. That's okay. Awesome.
See, this is the technology. That's why we've been doing the pirate thing. I'm going, look, man, it's a copyright. They don't give a crap about that. What they're worried about is protecting they, them, those. And because these platforms are they, them, those. And libertarian activists have known this from the beginning. Oh, you know, Google, Zuckerberg, you know, they're CIA. They're in a day, they're they, them, they. Whoever the heck they, you know, they're TTT. They, them, those. So these studies that you've done, what's been the impact from academia, from, you know, the community that you would think maybe, you know, mainstream, or, you know, are they even saying bad thing? I mean, hell, it's all their studies, gazillion studies. They don't like any of them, or they pick one and say, you suck because of them. I mean, are they even acknowledging you exist?
No, not really. I mean, I haven't been on the radar too much, so I think that's, in essence, I think that's a good thing.
Oh, here it comes!
In a way. Until I did Ernie's show.
But, it'll be the first time.
But, you know, I mean, it is what it is. I'm just trying to contribute. Together we can all make a difference, right? It's not any one person. It's synergy. It's just this momentum that we can build through grassroots efforts like what you're doing is what's going to win the day. And I think the censorship is a sign that they really feel like they're losing. They really feel like they're losing. And I believe they are losing. And the truth will prevail. I really believe that. That's why I chose that for the tagline for my book, my 1,200 Studies ebook, 1,200 Studies, The Truth Will Prevail, because in the end it will. It will, because of people like you, Ernie, that are out there, that are pushing the envelope, that are trying to get this information out so people still have ways of thinking for themselves. We are being told what to think by all these talking heads. People need to think for themselves. They need to learn how to think for themselves if they don't know how to think for themselves. And they need to do their due diligence. They have to do a little bit of work. I'm sorry, but you have to put in a little bit of effort if you really want to know what's going on in the world and these kinds of issues. So that's really what I'm hoping that we can all do, is just educate people about how to find the resources, how to look at the information, how to access it, and then to make up their own mind, not let somebody tell them what to do or program them to do something like a robot.
All right, when you did this, when you put the studies together, what was your motivation and what was your standard for success? I did it. Okay, it's out there. You got some, you know, one of our friends, an activist, Marilyn, that's what you remember how we met and got introduced. And, of course, one of the best things is you get introduced to all these other guys that we have. Now you got the press flesh with, you know, Dr. Judy and Dell and Wayne and James and all these other guys. And so they know about it, and I'm sure they use you as a resource. But you were looking for what? Some acknowledgement, just downloads, help, I did my thing, I'm done. I mean, what's your level of success for doing it?
Well, really, I mean, what started me on this journey was I started seeing social media, some of them being shared by relatives and so forth, that were really very condescending, very denigrating to parents who chose not to vaccinate their children. I have four children that were never vaccinated, and they are some of the healthiest kids on the planet.
Exactly.
In fact, Dr. Paul Thomas, who's a board-certified pediatrician in Oregon, just published a peer-reviewed study with James Lyons Weiler, where they showed how much healthy is over 10,000 practice. And he vaccinated those that want vaccines. He does an alternative plan for those who don't want the full vaccines. And he honors the wishes of the parents who don't want to vaccinate children. So he's
what happened to that doctor?
He's the perfect pediatrician that you can never find these days. And so they published this study looking at these 10,000 kids in his practice, and the differences in the children who are never vaccinated are astounding compared to the kids vaccinated, and even the kids who are vaccinated, with regard to incidents of allergies, asthma, eczema, ADHD, all these different illnesses that fill up the offices of pediatricians. Children who are not vaccinated have virtually almost none of that stuff. And this was an amazing thing. So as soon as, like, 5 days after that published study came out, he came under attack by his medical board, like you could probably imagine, for doing some kind of science around this, right? And so he's been fighting a battle against that. But you know, so I was seeing social media posts that really are condescending to parents who chose not to vaccinate their children. And it got worse and worse. I saw Jimmy Kimmel did a monologue where he brought in doctors. They set up a stage back, you know, behind the stage with all the lights and cameras. And they interviewed these doctors about parents who chose not to vaccinate their kids. And these doctors were throwing F-bombs around. If you think you're as effing smart as me, I went to medical school for 10 years, and you just get your effing kids vaccinated, you know. And I said, game on. I said, okay, this has gotten to a level where I need to do something, because it's painting people who educate themselves. And Ernie, you know this, when you've been to these events, these vaccine events, and you've met these parents, you've met these women, these mothers with vaccine injured children, and you've seen their children and you've heard their stories. These are people who believed in the vaccine paradigm. They went and had their children vaccinated. And they were told by the doctors the vaccines were safe. They were told that it's a 1 in a million injury chance. Even after their first signs of injury, the doctor still told them to get their next doses, to go back and get more doses.
Because they need to get their boot.
Well, the parents and the mother said, my intuition told me it was wrong, but the doctor kept telling me I needed to do it, and so I listened to him.
Because he gets a financial incentive. They're like, you know, if we get a high, when I found that out, the doctors are getting rewarded by having a percentage of,
yes.
That's why they're dropping patients. You're mucking up my vote percentage. You know, I'm going, wow. Right back, Dr. Alan Palmer, just a little bit for final, you know, segment of what we can do.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Oh, Dr. Alan Palmer, I want to know his 1,200 studies, but you're going to keep it at 1,200 studies, or are you going to, you know, get a version, you know, 2,000 studies or something, just leave it at 1,200? 1,200 is enough.
Well,
sounds good.
Well, you know, I could have kept going. It could be 10,000 studies by now if I could have had the energy and the focus. I spent about 2,500 hours over 2.5 years producing it originally. So it was a major effort. But the only reason I could do it is because I ended up having a back injury that forced the sale of my practice. So I had some time on my hands. And when all that happened with, you know, the social media, you know, you know, chastising parents, et cetera, and it kind of came at the perfect time. So I guess everything happens for a reason, and it allowed me the time to be able to really invest into a project like this. So my whole goal is to just try to make a difference in the conversation and to give people a tool and a resource. So,
all right. Well, tell me, you know, I mean, you just want to be a resource. I mean, you had feedback from parents or anything, or somebody just, you know, loving on you a little bit? I mean, what's been your reaction?
Well, I've had tremendous feedback. I mean, just tremendous feedback. I've had some emails that, you know, just made me feel like this whole journey has been worth it, because from parents who have vaccine-injured children and things like that. And they just would tell me that, you know, I wish I had something like this. I never would have made the decision I made. But now at least, you know, I'm going to help promote what you're doing and support what you're doing, because I don't want that next person to have to go through what I'm going through. And think about it. It costs between $2 and $3 million to raise an autistic child. If a child develops autism, and I believe autism is absolutely connected to the escalating rise of number of doses, 72 doses by age 18 now of vaccines, with over 5,200 micrograms of aluminum by 18 months of age in the vaccines if they follow the schedule. So you can.
Is there a plan for that? Is there a reason? Are they like that? You know, we need to up this aluminum thing, keep the people down, because 10, 15 years from now, we're going to be worried about rising up, and we need some drones, and until we can get our robots done, we need more aluminum in the kids. I mean, is this intentional or something? Is there a plan?
Well, I don't know that there's a plan in that way, but you know, they tried live vaccines, live virus vaccines, but because they were live viruses, they actually gave many of the people the disease, and they caused spreading of the disease. So they had to attenuate or weaken the viruses and use an attenuated vaccine. But what they found was it wasn't enough of a stimulus to the immune system to create an antibody reaction to that virus. So what they do is they throw aluminum in there, which is a real aggravation to the immune system, along with that attenuated virus. And it creates enough of an immune response then to where antibodies are begin to be produced. So they're just, you know, trying to work around a way to you know, stimulate the immune system.
Nah, doing a guinea pig in us. It's all, that sounds, I don't even care. You know, they're just being stupid.
Yeah. Stupid. Well, in doing so, you know, there are, you know, it doesn't affect every single child in the same way, but there are genetically susceptible children will be damaged because they can't process. They can't eliminate some of the toxins in vaccines.
Hey, before we run out of time, I want to talk about this mRNA thing. We have a signs that you're going to start seeing around the valley here we're producing that says small M, capital RNA. mRNA shots, because they're not vaccines, mRNA shots equal GMO humans. Boom.
Mm, I like it.
I like it a lot, too. I'm going to make big ones. Overpasses. You want to know who did that? I did, you know, bunch of times. So I'm just like, you know, this is people don't know that. So talk about this. You know, this is not a vaccine. And what is it going to do to us? And what kind of studies you think come out on that?
Well, yeah. And the reason it isn't a vaccine is because in compared to the traditional vaccines where they use what I was saying, a live virus or a attenuated virus, what they've done is they've taken a little portion of the spike protein. Everyone's heard of the spike protein on the SARS-CoV-2 virus. A little portion of that, and they've encapsulated in a nanoparticle, a lipid nanoparticle, that also has polyethylene glycol in it, by the way, which is one of the reasons why some of the real severe reactions are occurring, because they estimate about 70% of people have some sensitivity or allergy to polyethylene glycol. So you start injecting that into millions of people, you're going to have deaths and severe anaphylactic reactions. So what they do is they take that little piece of the spike protein, put it in this little vesicle, this little carrier, inject it into a person. That vesicle allows it to be absorbed into the cells so that this particle of the spike protein gets into our cells. Then what our cells do with that is there's little organelles in the cells called ribosomes. The ribosomes are like a photocopy machine. They take that information and they copy it multiple times, numerous times inside the cell. So now you're making all these little particles of spike protein inside your cells then that becomes displayed on the outside of the cell to the immune system. So essentially, they're getting your cells to become the virus or the vaccine manufacturers. So our cells are manufacturing these little proteins. What could possibly go wrong with that, right? And so there's a lot of concerns over the potential for not only the short-term adverse reactions, which they say that 10 to 15% of people after their first shot get serious reactions. But what about the long-term reactions, the potential for creating autoimmune disease and other things like that? There's a lot of concerns over the long-term potential for adverse reactions with these types of, and this technology is experimental. It's never been used in humans before as a vaccine. So everybody has to realize that these trials, these vaccine trials, are not slated to end until October of 2022 or in January 2023, as far as the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccine, these two mRNA vaccine candidates. So everybody taking this vaccine is part of the largest human experiment in history. How many people are being told that they are part of the clinical trial? Because
a lot of people go, pick me, woohoo! You know, I want to do it. Let me do it. I can do it. So, you know, this is, I can see this is way, 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 way more evil than a lot of people realize, because what you're talking about is experiment. This is, you know, what was it, Dr. Moreau's Island? You know, we're turning everybody into a chimera. Hell, this is developed from, you know, other species, or they're doing new ways, and we're just going to mass produce warp speed out there, and if stuff happens good, pharma makes more money. I mean, holy crap. This is done by, you know, it's become clear to me. You know, there are, you create any of these kind of organizations with limits from liability, which they have, they call it a vaccine even when it's not, and then we get liability protection. We're not responsible, but you know what we did? We created millions around the world damaged that need other pharmaceuticals to alleviate symptoms, and we get rich, and we own you. And it's really no more complicated than that. When this all comes out, who do you go after? You know, who serves time? You know, who's that going to be?
Yeah, and that's the problem. With the PrEP Act, they have given or provided a liability-free environment, not just for the vaccine makers, but for everybody in the whole chain on down to who delivers the vaccine. So nobody is culpable for these vaccine injuries. So this is an issue. This is a major issue, and. You know, people need to realize, number one, it's totally experimental. They're part of a huge experiment. There's no recourse if they are injured. And we're talking about employers speaking about mandates for their employees. We're talking about airlines mandating vaccines to fly, you know, entertainment venues and sports mandating vaccines. These vaccine passports, if your viewers have not seen The High Wire, I recommend they watch The High Wire at highwire.com every Thursday and watch Del Bigtree's show. He's an Emmy Award-winning producer from The Doctors who now is doing the show called The High Wire. But yesterday's episode, they talked about the vaccine passports that are already in the works. They're already being put into smartphones.
Yep.
There's all these apps right now. So they're already pushing the idea and the concepts that you cannot engage in society unless you've had these vaccines.
Oh, but they didn't make you. They didn't make you. They didn't make you until they make you. But it was inconvenient not to do it. You're not going to be able to go here, do this, do that, whatever. I'm going, yeah. Under what conditions would you take one of these shots and knock them off?
Over my dead body.
Dead body. Dead body. For one. Anyway, I'm just like, I'm hell no. Of all the hills to die on, this is definitely one of them. You are not working some notion of potion around into my flesh. And I go, oh, please, can I have another one? But you don't want to do
it. Well, and earn here. Yeah, and I've always been a person for people. I will die.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Independence of me, or just Hancock, another independence cleric kind of individual, Mark Passio. Mark Passio, we first came attention, Mark Passio, a good friend of mine. He said, hey, man, you're going to see him at a Narcopoca. You say, yo, what's up? Then he came soon after and did a presentation at, it's called the International Graduate School of whatever the heck, the Thunderbirds. That was like a mile from my home. And I just show up and say, hey, you know, come on in the studio. Let's do this, get to know each other. Everybody wants to love on you a little bit. So he did. We've known each other. We're on the same path of, you know, kick butt against the they, them, those. And that's what he's been doing. Now, he's an anarchist, an independent researcher, public speaker, talk show host, conference organizer, freedom activist from the birth of country and freedom, Declaration of Independence, Philadelphia, PA. Mark has undertaken the task of assembling vast amounts of research in the areas of metaphysics, occultism, spirituality, symbology, and conscientious studies. In 2007, Mark began presenting this information in the form of a presentation series entitled What on Earth is Happening, with the intention of bringing the implications of this body of knowledge to greater public awareness. Mark launched his own website in 2008 at whatonearthishappening.com. In 10, Mark began hosting his own internet radio show, also called What on Earth is Happening, which has over 200 episodes to date. Mark was one of the co-founders of the Free Your Mind Conference, the Philadelphia-based conference on conscientiousness. Mind control and the occult. Now, we're going to get into this occult thing here a little bit. Mark has taught intensive live seminars, including natural law, and it goes on and on and on and on. This is the main thing that brought us to brought Mark to our attention, is an understanding of how they, them, those think, what they are doing, what's their motivation, how deep, dark. You know, if you're going to create a big shiny badge of I rule you, well, guess who wants to wear the shiny badge? They, them, those. And Mark is like, let me tell you who they, them, those are, and here they are, they, them, those, and all over your life. Well, now it's evolved into one great work network that he has started and just launched here recently that we're participating in. You'll start seeing today banner ads going up all over Freedom's Phoenix, and we're going to bring attention to it because it's curated by Mark to bring in, you know, some minds and presentations of, man, you need to, you know, see this as they start taking down everything. Well, how vulnerable is he, and what can we do to help with that? Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. So, Mark Passio, welcome to the show. Add in there whatever you want. Make sure people know who you is.
Ernest, thanks so much for having me back. It's great to be here. I'm a big fan of the work that you're doing. I'm really excited to have you on board the One Great Work Network. And that was a great intro. And, you know, I've been in this battle for over 15 years now and, you know, just trying to hammer away to get the information out and help explain what I feel sets my work apart is that I try to get down to the causal factors. I try to address not just the who, what, when, and where, but I get down to the why of the human condition. And that's what my work has generally been about at What on Earth is Happening, talking about the deep underlying philosophical principles that people need to understand to generate true freedom in all of our lives, and what we're doing that's holding that back. You know, I'm not afraid to get into negative stuff. I'm not afraid to get into the factors that people really need to know, but they are very, very loathe to think about, that they don't really want to get into because they find it either disturbing, frightening, or that they don't really want to just sit and address these issues that are really buried deep down inside their own psyche and their own psychology. So that's kind of what sets my work apart from other researchers, is I really address fundamental causal factors of the current human condition and what we can really do to change our own thoughts, our own behaviors. You know, a lot of people are, you know, do want to point the finger outward and, talk about the they, them, as you're talking about. And yes, there is a they, them. No question about that. You know, there are definitely people who are globalists. There are people who are, who I refer to as dark occultists, who are using human psychology against other people who don't know how it works. And, you know, they are out there. They're definitely taking action and doing things to bring people into a state of enslavement. But their all of their machinations can only work with our consent and approval, and only their all of their plans and agendas can only happen successfully if we do the behaviors. First of all, we're taken into their form of thought, and then we perform behaviors that are in actual opposition to natural law or the laws of morality. When we fall into that trap, when we fall, for that, then we're generating the conditions of our own enslavement. It's not really them doing it. It's them influencing us to do it. And that's what I try to talk about, that we have to change our own thoughts and our own behaviors. That's really the crux of all of my work, both with What on Earth is Happening and then highlighting other people's work now with One Great Work Network.
Okay, you're highlighting other people's work, but there's, how are you curating? I mean, this is because Mark Passio says, well, what is it that you're looking for? I mean, how many people, what is it based on?
Sure, I'll explain that basic process or procedure, if you will. The One Great Work Network is a conglomeration of individuals. First of all, it's not an official group or organization, and it's a by invite only network. So if someone's work catches my attention, I will send out a letter of invite to them to see if they're interested in participating in this group effort, basically, called One Great Work Network. And of course, the One Great Work is to end human slavery. It's to end the condition of human slavery by changing human minds and hearts. So that's what the One Great Work is, first of all. It's by invitation only. So it's not like anybody can create an account on this website. I have to invite you. And should someone accept, we onboard them onto the network. We have a group of content creators. Right now, I believe we have now 43 content creators who are officially on the website. They are all basically the curators of their own content and information. So I don't actually pick and choose things that I want on the site. I am picking and choosing people who I would like to contribute as editors of the website, basically, and as content creators. So once I confirm someone for the site and they come on board, we help them to basically learn the content management system that we're using for our website. And then they could put on their own personal page on the website any content that they want. So they become, in effect, a publisher on the website. That's really how it works. That each content creator is given their own blog site within the network, and then they could publish articles. They could publish artwork. They could publish audio podcasts. They could publish videos. Basically, they're a content contributor to the whole network. That's really how it works. So it's not actually me just saying, well, I'm going to put this content here. It's me basically inviting people to publish their own content on the network.
It's a good list of people. I mean, everybody go check it out. Yeah. You know, it's One Great Work Network. OneGreatWorkNetwork.com. More Mark Passio. We come back just a little bit.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
With Mark Passio, OneGreatWorkNetwork.com. Go check it out. We're putting up the ads right now. Now, this is one thing that, people like this, have come to our attention, a lot of times from the same people. You know, we have some others that have kind of dabbled in this. Max Egan, have on regularly. We have, Mark Passio. We look at his work. And it comes down to this one thing, man, we're up against something. There is something. We had, Mel Krell, Melody Krell. She was a Hollywood actress, is in Hollywood. We had her on, and she explained a lot. A beautiful young woman that just, man, I got a book to write. And it came from, she went to Florida visiting with her father, and at the retirement area there was a 80, 90-year-old, used to be military intelligence. Well, you want to know what's really going on? Let me tell you what's really going on. These people are evil. Then what do we get? Just yesterday, Clapper, which used to be, NSA or CIA, whatever, one of them, and he's on tape telling the FBI in the interview, he goes, yeah, Pence, pedophile, compromised, this guy, that guy, all these people. And yeah, they got the goods, on them, and we know and we control, and that's the way it is. What are you going to do about it? And then this never sees the light of day, and somebody recorded on their cell phone or something, and this gets out. Well, this is all what Mark has been saying and talking about for years. Because he actually knew, because as a young man, he kind of, knew. All right, tell that story, Mark, and get us up to speed.
Yeah, what you're referring to, Ernest, is my background in occult organizations. And, when I first started this type of work, I sort of debated with myself whether I was going to talk about my background in the occult, because a lot of people don't know what it is. They don't know what it means. And they think it's all evil. And what I was involved with certainly was something very bad. It goes much deeper than that with what the knowledge that these people have really is. So when I was younger, I developed a disdain for organized religion because it didn't answer a lot of the questions that I had about the world. And I felt that, my, family members, teachers, friends were, misleading me. And it really, because I didn't have the answer of, what was really taking place in our world. And I saw religion as something that was giving people bad information and false hope, and sort of developed a lot of anger and hatred about it, and decided I was going to look into the thing that was the exact polar opposite of that. And that led me into the world of occultism. And I gravitated toward dark occultism because there is a gradient. There is a differential there in what is done with the knowledge. It may be the same basic information and knowledge, but it's how it's used that determines whether it's positive or negative, whether it's good or evil.
Well, define occultism.
I gravitated toward the really dark side.
People say occult, and they, what does that mean? Is that Nike? Is that a brand of shoe or something? What does occult mean?
Right. Yeah, the word occult simply means hidden. It comes from the Latin verb occultare, which means to hide, to conceal, or to keep secret. And that's what we're really up against. We're up against people that hide information, that try to keep it secret, that don't want people to know, that censor, okay, that take information down when it conflicts with their narrative. This is how the occult works. The occult works by them having all the knowledge and keeping everybody else ignorant. That is how a dark occultism works. And that's what I gravitated toward. I gravitated toward Satanism. That was the branch of occultism that I got heavily involved in. And I became involved with a group called the Church of Satan. And I became a priest in that organization. God. So for a time, I held the rank of priest in the Church of Satan, which is an organization out on the West Coast, or previously was run by Anton LaVey. I believe it's now run out of New York. But it's about total egoism. It's about service to self only. It is about looking at everything only really from your own perspective and not caring about anything else that's going on. It's pure selfishness. It's also moral relativism is another big tenet of Satanism, believing that right and wrong is really whatever you say they are. There's no objective standard of right and wrong in the satanic mindset. Of course, there is objective right and wrong in nature, and that's what we have to learn and then apply our behavior to, align our behavior with. But in the dark occult, that's not even a consideration. It's step all over anybody that you have to get what you want. Right and wrong are subjective constructs that we can make up, and you know they could just serve our own interests. And then that leads to the really heavy duty stuff, which is you know social Darwinism, you know, and eugenics. That's their basic program, is putting everybody in this socially Darwinistic dog eat dog mindset of nature as a vicious, you know, whoever is the most vicious animal comes out on top and rules. And then that leads to, you know, the rulers can get to decide who lives and dies, and that's eugenics. These are really the pillars of dark occultism, as I refer to it. But what people have to really realize is that all occultism really is hidden knowledge about how the human psyche works and hidden knowledge about how the laws of nature work. And if a select group of people can control that information, they could basically manipulate people in almost any way that they want, because it's like taking candy from a baby to manipulate the ignorant. We have to look at this not so much as, hooded figures in robes going out and lighting bonfires out in the woods and sacrificing animals. You know, we have to look at it more like it's deep, ancient psychology that a select group of people holds close to themselves and tries to keep away from everybody else, so it makes everybody else easier to manipulate and control. That's really what dark occultism is. It's ancient psychology that these psychopaths apply. And as a result of applying that psychology on people who are completely ignorant of how it works, they're basically ruling them.
Okay. I'm looking at trying to understand the motivation for people to want to associate with or be part of this is what? Are you're going to be happier, you're going to be richer, you're going to be get laid more. I mean, you know, look at all the bare boobies, you know, in the
all
corner.
Of that.
What?
Yeah, all of that. It's any egoic desires, you know, base materialistic egoic desires. The general promise is you'll have a leg up on your fellow man in every way, and that will benefit your life because you'll know something that they don't know, and then you'll be able to basically use that to your advantage to manipulate and to get ahead.
Okay, so
that's
the mechanism
the
for this
and people.
The mechanism for doing this is whatever it takes. You know, you strip away empathy and compassion. You're like, we can go along, get along in this club of skull and bones of whatever the hell, and we're going to, you know, kill, maim, do. I mean, anything counts if it's against somebody that's not in the club. I mean, how far are they willing to go? What are they advocating?
Well, not everyone in the ranks has that type of a mental attitude, especially not in the lower ranks. You know, the lower ranks are more useful dupes that are, you know, tapped for their, you know, resources, capabilities, etc. The higher ranks, yes, those are the psychopaths that have that type of a mindset of, you know, we'll throw anybody under the bus at the earliest convenience if it suits our purpose, if it suits our agenda. You know,
all right,
they'll turn on their own rank and file.
This feels up. It feels here. Are we going to get from this? Who? The government like this? What other group? We're going to find out.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
And another independence declaring kind of individual, Mr. Mark Passio. Now, we're promoting onegreatworknetwork.com. And I see, it's a .com. That means, you know, it's a DNS servers, if we don't like it, and you're turned off, you know. And, you know, you got people that are on there using various different platforms and so on, and then you communicate doing a Discord is his favorite. And then we have, you know, so I'm just like, this is, it's all these great, wonderful Mark Passio castles built on foundation of the man's sand. I mean, do you have, you know, a future of, because you're way more geeky than I thought you were, you know, as we're going through this, I'm like, damn. And you built all this stuff? So I'm going, all right, the future. Are we putting it on they, them, those as a foundation here? You got a future plan?
Well, yeah, right now it is built on the traditional web. But I do have plans to take all of my material into the distributed web, IPFS. You know, the distributed internet is really the future. It's where it's at. I understand the need for that. And, yes, it is something that I want to, future-proof all the information that we are putting out by putting it onto. So, right now it is simply on a traditional web server, which is obviously client-server-based. But, I definitely get the whole paradigm of the distributed internet, and I think that's the direction really anybody that is in the field of content creation like this needs to go, for sure.
We just started, I didn't want to give the name out, but a Telegram group that it's active. We just finished the plan and the formatting, and there we got a project manager, and we got your representatives from other platforms that we're going to be putting our content on, and then it feed these platforms. So they're pulling it from us as opposed to me got to upload it 14 times everywhere and watch spinning wheels to take the data process. So this is what we're working on now. And it's way further along than people realize. And I'm wondering what technical skills you could add to it, or if you just want to lurk or you want to be part of the development of this. Because what we're doing is we're creating a Pirate Box Liberty Library. And it's kind of like, you know, the curation of what you're doing. And it gets preloaded onto, we have Raspberry Pis with a 2 terabyte drive that all this is preloaded, the pen files. So when anybody gets it, it's done. You plug in the power, the Ethernet, boom, you're a node. And you already have all these pen files and platforms. The Liberty community is done. And then it gets added to, and then those pen files get added to, and we got Internet 3.0 kiss my ass like now. So we're not waiting. We've been working on this for a few years. We already did, you know, Corbett's and Freedom's Phoenix and Pirates and everything as demonstration. So now the hardware and software is being, you know, make it grandma adjust button. Because that was my thing. I mean, you know, when you and I were going over all the stuff, the platform, I'm going, whoa, man. You know, is there a grandma adjust button here? And he made it pretty simple. It's really, you know, he walked me through it like I was grandma. And I kind of understood, you know, probably a little more than maybe most. But it's definitely nice to have somebody walking you through it, which I have done on Freedom's Phoenix with other people doing different things. So, and we have tutorials and all that kind of stuff, which you did too, video tutorials, as you have people going through. So for content providers, you know, if you get an invite from Mark, make it as easy as possible. And this is the kind of stuff that needs to be curated that we don't lose it. But it's still on them, those platforms. So if you're willing to do this, what we're building is for content providers like you to have this stuff that then can feed, you know, to other platforms, or we could feed to your platform from our IPFS entries. When we put it in there, it's formatted in such a way that you work with us, and that's one reason why I want you to be involved, because then I don't have to reload it. It just takes it straight from one-time loading. It goes to you, goes to Flow, goes to the library, all these ones that we are interfacing with to have this happen. And what happens is it's not on some server with a DNS that they turn off and you're not allowed. Because that's common, Mark. What's your opinion on that? Are they going to go after the naming system? Huh? Are they?
I think it's going to be a lot harder of a sell for them to start shutting down websites than just deplatforming people from social media. So, but if it does go in that direction, I mean, that would be an extremely negative turn of consequence. I really would hope that, hosting providers would reject that, because they are supposed to remain neutral platforms instead of, acting in the capacity of publishers. So far, web hosting providers have stayed out of that arena. It's really the big tech companies that have been pushing the censorship agenda, like Google, Apple, Twitter, et cetera. So, right now, well, we haven't come under any attack website-wise, you know, domain, et cetera, hosting provider. But I don't dismiss that. I'm not dismissive of that. I'm just saying that for them to do that with hosting providers, first of all, there's a lot more hosting providers. They would have to control all of them. And then also, it would be a much harder sell to the public to say, you know, we lobbied to the hosting provider to try to take this content down. Generally, if you're on your own platform, they're not going after websites right now. Again, I would not leave anything out of the realm of possibility when it comes to what these psychopaths are willing to do. So I don't dismiss that that might be coming in the future. But I think we need to future-proof our information anyway. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm a fan of, you know, blockchain-based storage like Library, LBRY, you know, .TV, Odyssey, you know, BitChute, you know, things like that. But really, the true distributed web is going to lie in technology like IPFS, D-Web, et cetera. That's really where it needs to go. And I'm all for coming in as even like a beta tester for this type of stuff. I think what we could do is like reach out to our general viewing audience and, you know, ask them if they want to host some of these boxes, you know, or even just make them available for whatever low cost that they can be. Yeah. Multiple people host them as nodes.
Yeah, boom. And, you know, that's one thing, because we've been doing this with Corbett for a couple of years already. And he's sitting there, mm-hmm. you know, tapping his foot, waiting on. He goes, you do this, I'm going to tell the people, you know, rock and roll, just do it. And then it's done.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the content providers themselves will want to have the box because that's where they're going to be loading the pen files to. So when they load the file to it.
We could build those nodes, build a node low cost, you know, distribute them to people that have decent internet bandwidth, and, you know, you're off to the races. I see that as a great model for protecting this information,
future-proofing
it on the distributed internet.
Do you have a Telegram account?
Yeah, I do. I made a channel. I have nothing up there yet. I just got into Telegram recently.
Okay, well, no, I
was using Signal for a while, but I just recently created a Telegram account, I will be making channels.
Yeah, I'm not advocating anything other than it's where they're doing it. You know, we're hoping to create our own, you know, pirate communication, hailing frequencies, invisible to crown. That's part of this thing anyway. So, but what I would like, if you're willing, is to make you part of this, and you can comment all you want or not, and probably give it a little bit, but we're just starting. We got the planning documents and the developers on there representing some of the platforms. I would like you to at least lurk it so that you can see how far along we are and what we're doing, and then as you participate or know someone, I don't want you to have to spend there's not going to be a whole bunch of yakety yak. This is get down to business. So I think you would be perfect for this because I want you to, at the early stages that you're doing this, to have this integration. Because this is
Ernest, I'm in all the way. I think it's a great project, and I trust your judgment. You know, I know that you've been in this field, you know, since the beginning, and I know that your intentions are honorable. So I definitely want to get on board with the whole IPFS, you know, distribution of this information. No doubt about it.
Yeah, because it's your audience and people that do. Because I find it disturbing. And it's not like we, you know, have a lot of choices. We're trying to create the options. But when you do something as important as what you're doing on their system, they flip a switch, everybody, it seems like they're whistling past the graveyard, just pretending that they won't do it. And I'm going, I went through this before with all you guys on, you know, YouTube. Oh, they wouldn't do that. Facebook, oh, they wouldn't do that. Twitter, oh, they wouldn't do that. When the hell have they not done it? They always do it.
Yeah.
They're going to do this, too. We're going to have a solution. We'll be right back with Mark Passio.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
And Mark Passio, we've got the future is here we go. I can hear we go. I'm rare. Well, Mark is definitely one of the guys that we want, not much participation, don't waste time. But, you know, it's just to lurk a little bit on the development of where we're going, because it needs to be developed in such a way that, like, Mark understands not only the need, you know, the inevitability, and I think it's more inevitable than maybe, I don't know what his sense of inevitable, you know, I'm like now, you know, it's happening. Now, that's our motivation. A lot of these guys doing this, they're feeling, man, here it comes. You know, this is not academic. This is now. So you're building stuff. Well, it's the interface with, you know, we can make it available to everybody all the time. See, I don't even want to. This is why when you do a Signal or Telegram or something, I just had a good friend. He comes up on Telegram because it goes in your contact list and it says, oh, we got to have access to your contact list for us to, you know, who you're communicating with Signal and Telegram by their phone number. So when they join, it goes, woohoo, so-and-so's joined Telegram. And I, what do I always do? I go, I see you. Bunch of E's. I'm going, I see you. What do you mean you see me? Because I go, see, you think you're private? You know, you think you gave them your freaking phone number. What do you think was going to happen? Do they see it? It's end-to-end encryption. Maybe, maybe not, but it doesn't matter. They connect the pirate network. They can say, I want hailing frequencies invisible to Crown. I don't even want them to know that I had a message. Well, then, in the transaction fields of some private cryptos, maybe you have a chance. Then here comes Quantum. Blah, 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 blah. It's always a race. But if I'm putting my name, I go on and I register, which used to be a local guy out of California in the mid-90s, and then he had a convenient heart attack, and it goes to Geneva, whatever I can control you. That's what I can do. Well, I can is out there, you know, hosting, you know, giving the name associated with a number. Well, what happens when they disassociate that name with that number? You better know that number. You know, that's why we're screaming, man. You better know that what that number is behind it, that 192 point whatever the hell. And I'm going, and even that, it's on their freaking machine, their web, their thing. If you're not going off, you know, of that, going mesh network, satellite, whatever, eventually, then even then. But at the very least, you need to have to where the ones and zeros, hey, they don't even know that you're communicating to whom and how, and then you get into tours and all this stuff. And I'm not a geek guy, but I'm not stupid. And who knows how evil and bad these guys are with the motivation to do this very thing because they can. Mark Patio. So, Mark, give us, you know, help us in this last segment here. You know, tell us what we're up against, man. I don't think people understand.
We're up against an ancient priest class, and that's a hard thing for people to comprehend who have no background in occultism and don't really know what it is and think it's all evil. You know, again, it's ancient knowledge about how the mind works. That's what really the occult is. And, you know, if we learn it, right, and we know it as well or better than them, that levels the playing field, because then you can't really be manipulated in ignorance. This is why I've been trying to teach people. I've been trying to initiate people into occult knowledge for the better part of the last decade. You know, stigma that it's just something that should be shunned and not paid attention to and not looked at has to be, you know, gotten rid of. We have to explain to people that this knowledge is about how we work. This knowledge is about what motivates us. This knowledge is about, you know, what we have to learn and why to change thinking and behavior. It's all about changing incorrect thinking and which leads to bad behavior in the world. You know, that's what underlies everything that manifests. That's what I call the real law of attraction. You know, if your thoughts are wrong, and you don't have the truth in hand, then, and what more than anything else, you don't have what is right, what is moral. You know, what is right means what is true, but it also means what's moral. You know, what is right to do as far as a behavior that concerns another individual. You know, when their life, rights, and freedom are, you know, involved. Okay, so if we don't know what's moral, the behaviors that we do are going to be chaotic. They're going to create chaotic consequences for ourselves and everybody around us. And that's what's happening. That's what I call in my work the law of freedom. The law of freedom is that as collective morality increases, collective freedom increases. It's very simple. The more moral a population of beings behave, the freer they become. The more immorally a population of beings behave, the more enslaved they become. So then all we have to do is look at the result. Are we free as a whole species and a society? Or are we becoming rapidly more enslaved? And that will give you the answer to, is our collective behavior going in more of a moral direction or more of an immoral direction? That's called the law of freedom. You know, when it comes to sharing that information and helping people to understand it, that is what I call de-occulting it. That's de-occulting the laws of nature. You know, I don't consider myself anymore an occultist at all. I consider myself a de-occultist. That means that I am taking information out of hiding and distributing it as widely and as freely as possible to people who want to understand it. And that's really that's the promise of the whole internet, right? The internet made that possible. The promise of the internet is for somebody to be able to share information with others as a publisher. Okay, as somebody who is sounding the alarm, as somebody who's blowing the whistle, okay? And, you know, the distributed internet is going to take the first iteration of the internet and it's going to build on that promise. It's going to make it virtually impossible for censorship to happen. Again, the technologies that Ernest is talking about here on this broadcast are about making censorship completely impossible. It's not about negotiating anymore. It's about saying, well, once this is out, you can't put it back. You can't put the genie back in the bottle, so to speak. And I think that that's a good endeavor to take part in. And I think more people should do a little bit of research and attempt to understand what a distributed model of information is versus a centralized model. Because once you understand that, then you can understand where these technologies are headed and why it's a good thing that we take them in that direction.
Yeah, and to advocate for it and to pimp it and to make sure everybody knows about it, you know, what's done. And we use their system to do it. And we take Parler and put it on Amazon's cloud. And we take Signal and we put it on blah, blah, blah. You guys are killing me. You know, and the whole time, for years, I'm going, you know, they ask, oh, Ernie, are you on, you know, this platform? And how come you're not pushing that? And how can I go, is it on a server? Can you take, like, I give you an example, Brighteon. You know, they come in with a, you know, the YouTube killer, they don't like it. And Mike Adams goes, we're going to, you know, the Health Ranger guy, we're going to go over here and you should come over. Just like, you know, you say, you know, hey, Ernie, let's go be on the thing. And I go check it out. And I'm like, well, can you delete a video? We put up a video, and somebody's going to come up with a 45 to your head and say, you got to take it. Oh, okay, I guess. Delete. I go, I'm not interested. Within weeks, the New Zealand shooting happened, and they didn't want that video out anywhere for nothing. That just went away. Just like the Las Vegas, you know, Mandalay Bay shooting and everything. All of a sudden, you know, the biggest story of ever, and it went away. Why? And who took all that stuff down? And they go, oh, okay, even Brighteon took down that. Why? Under threat? Because they can. And I'm going, don't sit there and tell me how great and wonderful you are when you build it on their platform, and they're going to, you know, totally disrupt everything that you want to do and you built because you built it on their foundation of sand. So I go, no, I'm not on that because it's not going to sustain itself. I'm going to invest an enormous amount of time, a whole bunch of effort, and then when it really matters at Super Bowl time is when they're going to take it down because they can. I'm not wasting the time. So we need to have...
I agree. We need to go to other platforms for sure. You know, this is what I just completed, and it is. It's an enormous amount of work. Ernest is correct. Because, you know, me and some other people who are assisting me with my content took several months to just get everything on the whole What on Earth is Happening website basically transferred over to library. And we're still not done. We did our whole news section and video section on What on Earth is Happening. It's all converted over to LBRY library. But we're going to continue with the podcast section next and convert that all over to library. This way, nothing can be taken down. It's all on a blockchain. And again, open distributed system is next, which is like IPFS or D-Web.
Definitely.